2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's The Stranger, the September 1977 album which turned Billy Joel's Piano Keys of Ivory into platinum.
If that's moving up, then I'm moving out.
But if I was somebody out there who never knew Billy Joel's album work and just knew me from my singles, I don't know if I'd be that crazy about me.
I love you just the way you are. Only the good die young. Oh, baby. I tell you, only the good die young. Only the good die young.
So I was kind of laboring in obscurity to an extent. And when the Stranger album did hit, it became crystal clear to me what I wanted to do.
Don't give in to your desire when the stranger comes along.
Hi, this is Billy Joel in the studio.
Okay, quick quiz. Who is runner-up to Elvis Presley as the top album-selling singer in America? It's Billy Joel, the unofficial mayor of New York City, who, unlike de Blasio and Bloomberg, is not term-limited, but holds that distinction for life. When we sat down together in the studio, the only thing Billy Joel claimed that he did not want to discuss that morning was his fall 1977 blockbuster breakout, The Stranger. A bit of a change-up pitch for me, since that monumental album was one of the primary reasons I was there. I mean, after all, it knocked the iconic Simon & Garfunkel Bridge Over Troubled Water out as the top seller in Columbia Records' long-storied history. But I wisely took the pitch rather than line-driving it back at Billy Joel, him fiercely independent and a card-carrying contrarian, with me figuring that this engaging conversationalist with the unpretentious attitude would be obliged to get around to discussing the 10-million-plus seller The Stranger at some point to commemorate its 40th anniversary. And as you hear in this classic rock interview, based on his four previous albums, no one could have predicted the superstar popularity about to develop. Billy Joel had charted as early as 1973 with the title song Piano Man from his second album, and progressive FM rock radio certainly played Captain Jack and later New York State of Mind. But after three trips to the plate for venerable Columbia Records without a solid hit, there was a real chance that The Stranger album would be Billy Joel's last time at bat.
I heard you come up with a great line, I always wanted to play Yankee Stadium, but I didn't have the arm.
Yeah. Well, I was in Little League, too. You know, I played, I was a shortstop.
Me too.
And they moved me to second base.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah, you got a rag arm.
Yeah, I didn't have the arm.
No, me
just
either.
Didn't have a great arm, but I made it to Yankee Stadium. My idol was Billy Martin when I was a kid. My middle name is Martin, William Martin Joel. So, I relate to Billy Martin because he was always a troublemaker. He was always a big mouth. He was always in some kind of hot water. Oh. And he'd stir it up. I mean, Mickey Mantle was a great athlete, but kind of a boring guy.
He never said a word, no.
Yeah.
No.
And the same with guys like Maris and Hank Bauer. These guys were all kind of crew-cut, very conservative types. And Billy was always taking him out, taking him these joints when they'd get into swing outs. And, you know, that was Billy Martin. He was always mixing it up. So I related to that, especially when I was in school, because I was kind of the class clown.
Didn't you perform for a while early on in the, maybe when you were out in the West Coast? Using just Billy Martin. Bill Martin.
Yeah, Bill Martin of the keyboards.
As a stage name?
Yeah, that's my middle name.
Well, we all have a face that we hide away forever, and we take them out and show ourselves when everyone has gone. Some are satin, some are steel, some are silk and some are leather. They're the faces of the stranger, but we love to try them on. Well, we all fall in love, but we disregard the danger. Though we share so many secrets, there are some we know.
never tell. Why were you so surprised that you never saw the stranger? Did you ever let your lover see the stranger in yourself? That I came home to a woman that I could not recognize. When I pressed her for a reason, she refused to even answer. It was then I felt the stranger kick me right between the eyes. Well, we all fall in love, but we disregard the danger. Share so many secrets, there are some we never tell. Why were you so surprised that you never saw the stranger? Did you ever let your lover see the stranger?
That's the wonderfully cinematic title song to Billy Joel's 1977 classic, The Stranger. You can almost see the street lamp in the fog, with Bogart in his brimmed hat and trench coat beneath it. As so often is the case, Billy Joel has a love-hate relationship with the time-tested concept of excerpting one song from an album and marketing that song individually as a single.
On the one hand, a single cuts through a lot of years and years of trying to get attention on the airwaves. A hit single will just about get every station on it if it's hot enough, whereas an album will take a long time for people to discover these days anyway. But if I was somebody out there who never knew Billy Joel's album work and just knew me from my singles, I don't know if I'd be that crazy about me.
Really? Why?
Because it's number one, it's picked because it's the most commercial of all the songs.
Yeah. What does that mean, though? I mean, really, what does that mean?
Well, it's picked to appeal to the most people at one shot. It's sort of the lowest common denominator. It's sort of like what makes a hit TV show. It's supposed to appeal to the cut across all demographics, and it doesn't leave a whole lot of room for people to discover an artist.
Don't go changing to try and please me. Never let me down before. Mm-hmm. Don't imagine you're too familiar, and I don't see you anymore. I would not leave you in times of trouble. We never could have come
far. I took the good times, I'll take the bad times, I take you just the way you are. Don't go trying some new fashion, don't change the color of your hair. Have my unspoken passion, although I might not seem to care. I don't want clever conversation, never want to work that hard. I just want someone that I can talk to. I want you just the way you are. Need to know that you will always be the same old someone that I knew. I promise from the heart. I couldn't love you any better. I love you just the way you are. I can talk to. I want you just the way you
of the Grammy Award for Record of the Year. That's one of the biggest reasons that Billy Joel's The Stranger album has sold more than 10 million copies. Yet music writer Daniel Dirkholz points out, and I quote, "It's one of the cruel ironies of the day that Billy Joel has been relegated to a kind of adult contemporary hell, where his legacy is measured by soft rock staples such as Just the Way You Are and Piano Man and New York State of Mind. To be sure, well-crafted ballads are part of his legacy, but they're hardly the whole story."
You get pounded over the head when a single gets picked and it gets into the top five and top ten. They pound on that thing and they wail on it. And you start to get sick of it. It's like, enough already. Like I said, there's no sense of discovery. It's you're hit with it. You can have a hit single, which is a ballad. And most of the album can be non-ballads. They can be a lot of rock and roll. There can be stuff which is for more for AOR radio, chainsaw stuff, metal. There's the one ballad, you know, for some reason or another, tends to get an artist typed. And people who don't tend not to like ballads may not want to ever hear anything that artist does again just because of that. So it's like first impressions. I don't think a single necessarily represents what the body of my work is. I'm not saying I'm disowning them.
Right. No, I understand. But it's a one-dimensional aspect.
Yes,
of what
it's,
you do.
Yeah, it's sort of an advertisement for the other kinds of the music that I have. But it doesn't represent the other kinds of music because all the other stuff is different.
Anthony works in the grocery store. Is that all you get for your money? And it seems such a waste of time. If that's what it's all about, Mama, if that's moving up, then I'm moving out.
If that's moving up, then I'm moving out. Billy Joel from the 1977 breakthrough album The Stranger. Coming up next, Billy reveals how his albums are conceived and written, and later shares some keen observations on the business of music and media. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for The Stranger by Billy Joel.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Billy Joel with Redbeard.
Thanks, Billy. I'm Redbeard. His record-breaking 1977 album, The Stranger. A possible explanation for the lack of Billy Joel hit singles prior to The Stranger album may lie in the way in which Billy actually conceives an album.
Yes, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Every album has a... There's a reason for it being sequenced the way it is. There's a reason for the songs being written the way they are. Each song begat the other song, and it's all written in one fell swoop. So to take that single out of the context of the album really doesn't represent what I do. In other words, you take a song like Just the Way You Are, which is wedding couple's favorite song, but that doesn't tell you this is the same guy that wrote Only the Good Die Young, which is a song I got in a lot of trouble for. You see the point?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I've never heard it put quite that way. It's really interesting.
Fortunately, Only the Good Die Young came out as a single too. But if I have songs on an album which are not singles, they tend not to be heard by a big audience the same way the singles are. and people will tend to think of an album in terms of the album will have a complexion in people's minds based on what the single was. In other words, the Stranger album will be thought of as Just the Way You Are, Only the Good Die Young. 52nd Street will be thought of as My Life and Honesty. The Nylon Curtain will be thought of as Allentown, if it's thought of as a whole at all.
It's one of your favorite albums, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite albums. Yeah. But then again, that's an album album. There were very few singles that were pulled off that album, and the singles that were pulled off were not that commercial.
But you don't apologize for that, do you?
No, absolutely not. I knew what I was trying to do was make an album for what I wanted FM radio to be, which was the late 60s to mid 70s AOR, progressive freeform radio that I loved. And I created this album for AOR, and it wasn't there. You know, the formats had changed, it just wasn't there.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die young. That's what I said. Only the good die young. Only the good die young. You might have heard I run with a dangerous crowd. We ain't too pretty, we ain't too proud. We might be laughing a bit too loud. Oh, but that never hurt no one. So come on, Virginia, show me a sign. Send up a signal, I'll throw you the line. Stained glass curtain you're hiding behind never lets in the sun. Darling, only the good die young. Whoa, 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 whoa. I tell you, only the good die young. Only the good die young. You got a nice white dress and a party on your confirmation. Better, but I say it ain't. I'd rather laugh with the sinners and cry with the saints. The sinners are much more fun. You know that only the good die young. Oh, baby.
Good Die Young from the album The Stranger was a big hit and an equally big controversy for that one line, "You Catholic girls start much too late," from Billy Joel. It was about this time that some music critics decided to scrutinize everything the increasingly popular singer-songwriter released. The critical panning seemed inversely proportional to Billy Joel's rising popularity.
To me, the ballads were similar to what the Beatles did with Yesterday, In My Life, Here, There, and Everywhere. These are great songs, but the Beatles also wrote Helter Skelter.
Oh, sure.
And they wrote She's a Woman, yeah. Back in the USSR. Sure.
Why do you think you were singled out, and why were the Beatles spared? I've got my own theory. What do you think?
Well, at the time the Beatles were doing what they were doing, you didn't have the same critical establishment. In the 60s, you had more or less freelance, free-form journalism. Rolling Stone wasn't around until 67. And, you know, Sgt. Pepper, and hey, what was the knock about that? a lot of their stuff and a lot of their growth was done without a great deal of, you know, critical pot shots going on. You know, radio was just so thrilled with the Beatles that spoke volumes of, you know, how they were accepted critically. I don't think I was singled out by critics. I mean, I'm not paranoid about it. I think I was just more obvious. I was very successful at the time, and I was the guy to get. In a way, and I'm not trying to compare myself to the Beatles.
That's okay. I brought it up.
I'm just wondering what their format would be these days. I mean, would you get that same wonderful eclecticism out of, you know, from a group like that anymore? I don't think you can.
That'd be a fascinating novel to write.
Yeah. You also have to look at what was being played on the radio when the Beatles were out. You could listen to a station in New York City where I live and hear Otis Redding being played next to Cream. Then you'd hear Jimi Hendrix. Then you'd hear James Brown. It was all over the place. You would hear all kinds of music. Now, it's very conservative. The formats are very limiting.
She can kill with a smile. She can wound with her eyes. And she can ruin your faith with her casual lies. And she only reveals what she wants you to see. She hides like a child, but she's always a woman to me. She can lead you to love, she can take you or leave you. She can ask for the truth, but she'll never believe. And she'll take what you give her as long as it's free. Yeah, she steals like a thief, but she's always a woman to me. She takes care of herself. She can wait if she wants. She's ahead of her time. Oh, and she never gives out. And she never gives in. She just changes her mind. She'll promise you more than the Garden of Eden. And she'll carelessly cut you and laugh while you're bleeding. But she'll bring out the best and the worst you can be. Blame it all on yourself, 'cause she's always a woman to me. Ahead of her time. Oh, and she never gives out. And she never gives in. She just changes her mind. She is frequently kind and she's suddenly cruel. But she can do as she pleases. She's nobody's fool. She can't be convicted, she's earned her degree. And the most she will do is throw shadows at you, but she's always a woman to me.
Fabulous tradition of John Lennon and Paul McCartney, that's Billy Joel's She's Always a Woman from 1977's Career Maker, The Stranger album. Next, The Sword of Success, cuts two ways when Billy Joel returns. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for The Stranger by Billy Joel.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Billy Joel with Redbeard.
Thanks, Billy. Rolling Stone magazine marks The Stranger as number 67 on its top 500 albums of all time. Over the course of the four albums which preceded The Stranger, there had been increasing pressure on Billy Joel to modify his writing and performing in order to fit into some formula for recording a hit single. Wisely, Billy had resisted. Now, with The Stranger album breaking all sales records at venerable Columbia Records, there was suddenly equal pressure to not change anything, to make Son of Stranger or Stranger 2 next time. Again, Billy Joel stubbornly refused.
I was pretty well a professional performer, musician, writer, and it was also a time of life, I think, where my instincts were keen. It was sort of like, I guess, when a rookie breaks big in the majors and just has a great couple of years. I mean, that's what happened. Everything becomes very clear to you what you should do. You know, hopefully you make the right moves.
It takes some performers 20 years to see the forest for the trees, to be able to perceive themselves as the audience perceives them. How could you be so close to your music, your success, and your career, and see it so crystal clearly from a vantage point of 2.5 years?
I think some of that has to do with the fact that I've been kicking around, as you said, paying my dues for a while. And when the success came, I was prepared for it. I wasn't an overnight sensation. I didn't have a success with my first record. Actually, I started recording in the 60s with a couple of local bands. And I'd been really recording since about 65, when I was 16. And Piano Man was a turntable hit, maybe not so much a big commercial record, as people think. It was a turntable hit in 74. And then between 74 and The Stranger, you're talking about 75, 76, 77. So I was kind of laboring in obscurity to an extent. And when The Stranger album did hit, it became crystal clear to me what I wanted to do, what I was going to do.
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. But then if you're so smart, tell me why are you still so afraid? Where's the fire? What's the hurry about? You better cool it off before you burn it out. You got so much to do and only so many hours in a day. Hey, and you know that when the truth is told, you can get what you want or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? Slow down, you're doing fine. You can't be everything you wanna be before your time. Although it's so romantic on the borderline tonight. It's too bad, but it's the life you lead. You're so ahead of yourself that you forgot what you need. Oh, you could see where you're wrong. You know you can't always see when you're right. You're right. You got your passion, you got your pride. But don't you know that only fools are satisfied? Well, dream on, but don't imagine they'll all come true. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you?
This is the accordion solo. It's hard to imitate an accordion.
Disappear for a while. It's all right, you can afford to lose a day or two. Ooh, 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 ooh. When will you realize Vienna waits for you? And you know that when the truth is told,
You can get what you want, or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. When will you realize Vienna waits for you? When will you realize Vienna waits for you?
The recording and arrangements on the Stranger album were aided and abetted by producer Phil Ramone.
I first worked with Phil when we made the Stranger album. It was the first time I actually got to record with a guy of that magnitude. I had talked about working with Phil back when we were doing the Turnstiles album. I met him, and Phil was not a bona fide producer. He was an engineer. He was the engineer par excellence that a lot of people used. He was on a lot of records. And he was working with Paul Simon at the time, where it was, I think it was a co-production deal. It's very nebulous what a producer is, what people decide to call themselves on an album. Executive producer usually means that they didn't do anything. Producer could be the guy who, as soon as you see executive something, you know the guy's so far upstairs.
He played golf.
That's right. He was an executive who kind of wanted his name on the record. But a producer can be someone who really puts an imprint on an album and guides an artist and makes the record what it is. Or someone who just suggests something once in a while and is kind of there and knows how to twiddle a knob here and there. We always admired Phil. All the musicians admired Phil because of his, you know, he's a technician. He's not just some Hollywood guy with a title who sweeps into the room with a cape and talks about, you know, concepts. Phil was a hands-on guy. He was we respect technicians. Musicians respect technicians because musicians are technicians too. We have an axe. We have this box, or we have this thing that we fiddle with, and we get it to sound a certain way. Technicians do the same thing. They have their knobs and their buttons, and they make things sound a certain way too. So there's an understanding and a respect. Which is sometimes why musicians have a tough time with singers, because singers don't play an act. Singers just kind of come in and scream on key. So, you know, musicians kind of sit there because we have our axes. So he's like, oh, well, this guy's just going to come in and scream on key. Big deal.
Producer Phil Ramone had already helped to realize two of the 70s greatest albums in Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks and Paul Simon's Still Crazy After All These Years, prior to teaming for the first time with Billy Joel for The Stranger album. Here's Phil Ramone with me in the studio.
I saw Billy Joel on an interview recently where he talked about our relationship. Now, Billy Joel certainly had done, before he met me, Piano Man, and had written probably some of the best records. Turnstiles was one of my favorite records, but
not a commercially successful album for Billy.
And certainly, whatever it is that comes between two people, it's a marriage. That 10 years that we spent together had moments of grandiose and sometimes silliness that makes the record come to life. That relationship, for me, is truly what I feel I am as a producer, is that something happens when he walks in and he has an idle thought and a melody, and in minutes or hours or days, the trust between us, so that the suggestions, even at sometimes I would prod him just unmercifully about lyric, because I said, if you don't write this third verse and make it different. And he'd say to me, why? It's good, what I think I'm saying here. I said, yeah, well, then you're in for it. Now I'm going to write the third verse, and you know what's going to happen. And, of course, the humor and the push and shove is what you don't know in a relationship, except years later. I would never have known what I did or am accused of or even accepted as being good or bad, except the records worked. But past success, you have to look at what you're talking about here in a relationship. I think that Billy, in many cases, has given me an awful lot of credit for things that happened because he could have and did many times make records without people like me, and he certainly made a good record. There's no question about it. But there is something that comes together in the teaming of and I compare it to film. I think of Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas and a few of the great directors meet or see each other in a screening room. Something happens. And what is it? I mean, it could be as simple as Spielberg saying, you know, I think that scene could be so much better if so-and-so or this line were deleted or added.
Billy Joel, the entertainer, was thrilling audiences for years, even prior to the release of The Stranger. Billy explains how his show has evolved from Holiday Inn lounges to stadiums.
What you want it to be is the world's biggest stereo system when you go see a concert.
But how do you do that in a place that's usually built to play either basketball or hockey?
You know, we've been doing those arenas since 77, so we got it down. If we don't have it down by now, there's only a few you can't do anything about, but for the most part, you can make them sound good. Also, the way we have our stage set up is really good for arenas because the seats in the back get just as good, if not better, sight lines than the people who are in the front first few couple of rows. I think the people in the back of the stage have a better seat, to tell you the truth.
Well, they're much more intimate to you.
Yeah, they're right on top of the action, whereas people on the floor kind of got to look up, and you don't always that close.
And people will call in, and they'll say, well, tickets are all gone. And I'll say, no, there's plenty of tickets. They say, well, yeah,
behind the side
of the stage or behind the stage. Mm-hmm. So for a Billy Joel show, that could be a hot ticket.
Yeah, we've tried to think about different ways to let people know without sounding too self-serving. I mean, obviously, it's in an artist's best interest to sell a lot of tickets and say, well, yeah, the seats behind the stage are the better seats. You know, people should naturally be cynical and sort of, you know, a little mistrustful of somebody saying how great the tickets behind the stage are. But we've been doing touring like this for a long time, and people know, I think, there's like a word of mouth. Well, you know, that's okay if the seats are behind the stage, because we've given people good value over the years in those seats.
The obvious question that comes up then is, why is every ticket a good ticket to see your show? Certainly, that's not the rule of thumb. That's the exception. What have you done consciously over the years to...
We've changed the... modified our stage production. The shape of the stage is actually an oval, which shapes itself very well to most coliseums, most arenas. Also, all the monitors are underneath the stage, so there's no obstructed
position. That's what was missing.
It's clean.
It was so clean.
So the musicians can hear their own amplifiers and their own monitor speakers, but you don't see them. They're not these big, bulky, boxy things, which most people see at concerts. Also, we fly the PA system. It's hung from the ceiling.
Suspended, yeah.
And their subwoofers are under the stage. So there's nothing cluttering or blocking any views. And if there are any seats which are blocked by production, we just don't put them on sale. They're called, you know, kills. They're seat kills. The production manager walks around the room and checks out all the sight lines the day of the show and decides which tickets they're going to release for sale that particular day.
Billy Joel's The Stranger producer, the late Phil Ramone.
It was a climb between how deaf you wanted to make the audience, right, or how good you could make it. And I was in favor of, and I was working and going to see artists like Bruce Springsteen and Billy. I was, of course, involved in it. And Billy Joel had, you know, had expanded from an hour to 2 hours, and then 2 hours and 30 minutes nonstop. Now, if you're going to kick people's heads and turn it up and crank and turn the subwoofers on and all of that stuff, you have to get into the invention of how to please people. And that kind of arena rock is hard to do. And it wasn't, the equipment wasn't around. And we went back to clubs. As a matter of fact, we did Songs in the Attic because we wanted to go back to find out the feel of a club again. It played a year's worth of arenas. And it's great, but it has a different feel. And every night that I was out, and I'd be out for maybe 5-6 days at a time with him, I learned another thing about an audience. And it really keeps you from getting cocky. It stops you from jumping up and down and saying, I think I know the formula. Because there's no formula.
A bottle of white, a bottle of red, perhaps a bottle of rosé instead. We'll get a table near the street.
in our old familiar place, you and I, face to face. A bottle of red, a bottle of white, all depends upon your appetite. I'll meet you anytime you want in our Italian restaurant. And the family is fine. You lost touch long ago. You lost weight, I did not know. You could ever look so nice after so much time. You remember those days hanging out at the village green. The engineer boots, leather jackets and tight blue jeans. You know the guy in the box plays a song about New Orleans.
And the king and the queen of the prom, riding around with the car knocked down and the radio on. Nobody looks any finer. Before on the head of the Parkway Diner, we never knew we could walk more than that in our life. Surely, Brenda and Eddie would always know how to survive. In the summer of 75, and they decided the marriage would be in the end of July. Everyone said they were crazy. When do you go, do you much too lazy? And Eddie could never afford to live that kind of life. Oh, but there we were waving Brenda and Eddie goodbye. Oh, oh, oh. Well, they got an apartment with cheap pile carpet, a couple of paintings, some seals. Best they could do was pick up their pieces. We always knew they were both final
from an Italian restaurant originally appeared on September 1977's Billy Joel album The Stranger, performed there on New Year's Eve 1993 into 94 at Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Billy Joel, and the show is dedicated to the late Phil Ramone. God bless his soul. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.